It's time for Blindly Obvious.
Hello and welcome to Blindly Obvious. I'm Tyler, as always, with my co-host Jeff. And today we are on the topic of conversation of heroes and villains. And as a kid, you know, you may have your favorite sports figure or your favorite comic book character that you kind of just idolize and view them as larger than life. And to the contrary, you know, you have your villains, the people that you just really like to dislike. And if you're into sports, it's probably your favorite player's arch rival. And in the comic books, of course, it's probably, you know, Kryptonite to Superman. Who would be your favorite hero, Jeff? Or maybe even, do you have a favorite villain?
We got to set the stage first. I probably should look up what a hero is defined by. In mythology and legend, a man often of divine ancestry who is endowed with great courage and strength, celebrated for his bold exploits, and favored by the gods.
Oh.
That's as a noun. A person noted for feats of courage or nobility of purpose, especially one who has risked or sacrificed his life. His or her life. There it is. There's his or her. And then the third version is, and that says celebrity. That's like, what? No, that's not a hero.
Nice.
A hero is not a celebrity. Although,
well, see, we can do both.
Although celebrities do play heroes.
we can do like real world or comic book heroes. Throw that in there.
All right.
We can throw in the,
the
biblical hero.
All right, let me get the next definition. Villain. The same dictionary definition. Villain. A character in a story or play who opposes the hero. That's pretty simple. A deliberate scoundrel or criminal, and one blamed for a particular evil or difficulty. That's a villain. So let me ask you this. So looking at heroes here, what would be, beside from, like, you know, our modern day or from comic books or sports, whatever.
But sure.
Go to the Bible. What would be a person that you look at? We're going to pull out Jesus. You can't pull the Jesus card.
Okay? You got to pick a different character.
Different character. But a person that is just like us, you know, flesh and blood, who you look at and go, man, that's a hero right there.
I'm going Solomon.
Why?
I think Solomon was given a lot of things that you could view maybe he didn't deserve. And not that he was, I don't say that he didn't deserve them because he was a terrible person, just because I just think he inherited a lot of things that he didn't, by definition of how we would view things, like he didn't really work that hard for them. It just kind of fell into him, right? He had so much honor and integrity that his goal wasn't to acquire more and more, but how to really serve the people best. It would make complete sense that based on the life he lived, he would be entitled and arrogant, right?
Because he was born into a...
He was born with, to use the metaphor term, he was born with the silver spoon, right?
Right.
He had everything he could ever want, always.
Into a dynasty where he would one day be king.
Yes.
Yeah.
He didn't have a sense of entitlement and arrogance. He had a sense of, God, how can I help your people know you better, and how can I know you better?
Yeah, for those who don't know the story, I believe he's king at this point. He was young, but God gave him a proposition and said, hey, Solomon, ask for whatever you want, and I'll give it to you. And he thought about it, and he said, give me wisdom, because I want to be able to faithfully serve you and these people that you've entrusted to my care. And because of that, God said, you could have asked for wealth. You could have asked for all these other crazy things, a long life.
Right, but your heart's in the right place.
Right.
And so I'm going to give you all those things along with what you asked for.
Right. So it's pretty amazing. I mean, that does speak to his character. You know, part of the hero in Solomon was his person.
Mm-hmm. And then I would say part of his flaw, his weakness, he couldn't get enough wisdom. And what I mean by that is I think it almost became like a drug to him of knowing so much and having the knowledge that I think sometimes then he came to know things that once he knew them and, you know, once you know, you can't unknow.
Yeah, he ended up diving into the occult.
Mm.
That's not very wise.
I feel the same way about my own life sometimes as to Solomon. I also have like a passion for knowledge. I just like to know things, learn things. And if I have an intuitional, you know, feeling about something, I usually try to pursue that or act upon it.
Yeah, there's things that are true that govern our universe that God has forbidden us access to. One would be astrology. The stars do declare God's plan, not because they're so smart, but because that's how he ordered it. It's like a map. It's like, sure, you take notes. God took notes in the stars.
You know, I would say it makes sense that it's forbidden is in that when you start to map out and strategize and understand the alignments, you are going to start to trust solely in those alignments versus trusting in God, right?
Right. You're looking for an independence from the knowledge of God or the will of God or the power of God and trying to have that power, knowledge, and wisdom for yourself.
Mm.
Yeah, it's dangerous. And then, and ultimately, that's what you find Solomon did in his latter years as he ventured off that appetite that he was feeding. Whatever that pure character was as a young man that he had wasn't enough to keep him from straying
sure
into places he should not have gone.
And isn't that one of the coolest things about the Bible is that the story doesn't always have the... I mean, we all like the happy ending, right?
Absolutely, yeah.
But it gives you the real and raw of... which we can all relate to, like, and we can understand and know, like, there isn't always a happy ending.
No, it shows the best of them and the worst of them.
Yes, yeah. Which is, that's all of us, right? There's a best of us and there's a worst of us. It's within every one of us. I think when we seek or, you know, seek a hero, we put these people on just unrealistic platforms of, well, they're so much better than myself. And we almost view them as perfect, like they are gods. And there's one perfect God.
Right.
To where... all of these people fall short just like you do.
When you give people that accolade that they are not worthy of, it not only sets them up for failure, it sets you up for disappointment because they're flesh and blood.
They're going to fall short of the standard.
Absolutely. When you assume, oh, that's Solomon. Solomon's wise. He'll never make a mistake. Well, now you're a fool.
Exactly. You know? There's your first mistake.
Right.
And in some ways, I think that he probably started to think that himself. I'm so wise. I've been given this by God. So I'm so wise. How could I make a mistake?
That's the scary part about when we justify and rationalize. We can talk ourselves into anything.
Hmm.
And that's a scary thought. You know, for me, in Solomon's, that's a tough one. The only reason why I picked this character is because is the volume of information that we have. And it's Moses.
Okay.
Like he was an amazing leader. Like he was one of the greatest, if not the greatest, Old Testament prophet and leader. God used this guy in magnificent ways. Like Solomon, well, he wasn't born into it, but he was raised in a dynasty where he wouldn't be a king or a prince, but he was treated like one. He was adopted into this dynasty with the Pharaoh, and the Pharaoh's daughter had compassion on him, took him in like he was her own son, and he was raised in a place of privilege. That in the end, he ultimately left.
To pursue God's calling.
No, not yet.
Oh.
He just walked away. What happened was he saw some guy, a Hebrew, one of his own people, being beaten. And so he killed the guard who was beating him.
Mm.
Hid the body in the sand, got found out, and fled.
So he's on the run because obviously now they're after his head for killing a guard.
He could have been forgiven. This guy's a prince of Egypt, man. They would have forgiven him.
Mm.
I mean, you mean to tell me that princes don't have people ordered dead?
Yeah, I think probably so, yeah.
He could have done that, you know? But for whatever reason, he felt guilt, he felt shame, he felt fear, and he fled. No, and he married some woman and started a family, got a new job, and probably never had a job before in his life, but he became a shepherd, and that's when the whole burning bush thing happened, and God called him.
So he moved into this, when he's in this location... no one knows who he is.
No idea.
He's just like, I've left we'll just call it my hometown where mm-hmm. everybody knows me. And I've moved completely across the country into this new small town where I could be absolutely anybody and nobody would know the difference.
Yeah, but he started on a good footing because at this well, they're trying to get water. These other guys were trying to take advantage of these women who couldn't defend themselves. And Moses stood up for him. So that's where the whole relationship started with this new life he would come mm-hmm. to enjoy. No, he had good character in that regard. I mean, his intentions were good to stick up for his fellow Hebrew.
Sure.
He just went overboard.
Maybe took the wrong way.
Right.
Of intention.
Right. Uh-huh. Yeah. Just went. I mean, listen, as a prince, you're trained to kill.
Mm-hmm.
You still have those fighting classes and all that stuff. And so he was capable.
Mm.
What I do find interesting, though, is God calls him. He's the reluctant hero. Like, he doesn't want it. He's like, God, he gives all these excuses why he shouldn't be this person. And he finally says the third excuse. He just says, God, you know what? Just find somebody else.
Mm.
Yeah, he's like, I'm not your guy. But of course, God says you are. and you will, and you're going to go. You know, it's just, I love that for him, he's that guy, and I guess I identify with that.
So clearly, clearly humble the entire time, and that, I mean, I have to imagine in some sense, he knows what he's capable of, right?
But he wants nothing to do with that power.
Sure.
Yeah.
Because I think he's also seen what power does. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, I guess I get the fine balance on that for sure.
But he's sent to Pharaoh. I can't believe this, you know. And apparently, it's not very clear, but he had a speech problem. And we don't know if he stuttered or what it was. So he's to go and tell Pharaoh to let God's people, his Hebrew people, go. So they can go worship God, you know.
So this dude is going to roll in
to the most powerful, to the most powerful man in the world,
and try to explain to this guy who's a king. And I can imagine, you know, isn't giving people more than 30 seconds of his time. If you haven't conveyed a point that he's interested in,
right,
you're out.
Right.
And that's who God sends there.
Yes. And it's very likely. It's very
that's
likely.
Actually good comedy.
It really is. It's very likely the Pharaoh in power was his brother.
Is Moses' brother.
Yeah, Moses' brother that he was raised, his brother he was raised with in the palace.
Mm.
Yeah, so in the big thing, it never lets on, did he ever recognize Moses?
Because how old was the Pharaoh at the time when Moses had to go back and tell him this?
Oh, my memory's not that good, but I know that when God called him to do this, he was 80 years old.
This is Moses.
Yeah.
Okay.
So we're talking a lot of times probably passed from when he killed somebody, fled, and then came back.
Okay.
Maybe 40 years. I don't know.
I don't know, man. You can't remember what I did yesterday. You think somebody's like, oh, 40 years ago, man. We were together.
But what's wild is what God did with Moses and the display of power that you got to see with the plagues. And the Pharaoh had these magicians. We call them sorcerers or diviners today. People who would use the demonic to do supernatural things.
Mm.
And Moses could do the very same things and even greater things than they, but he didn't do it through demonic power or incantations that summoned demons to do that bidding. He did it through the power of God.
Mm.
Really cool stuff. Yeah.
Creepy though.
It is. So
imagine
like,
being there like in the time and watching that.
Well, I love one of the scenes, again, God demonstrating his power is one of the signs that God gave Moses was his staff would become a snake. Well, he threw his staff down, it becomes a snake, and so does the other magicians. They're like, oh yeah, we can do the same thing. They throw their staff down, they become snakes, but Moses's snake, his staff, eats them. You know, it's like, oh man, it's awesome.
Like almost like an anything you can do, I can do better.
Yeah, and then he does a thing where he puts his hand in his cloak and pulls it out, and it's leprous. He's got leprosy, the sores and the rot, which would have been one of the greatest things they feared. It's this disease that just makes you wither and waste away.
They go, oh my, there's a guy with COVID-19. Yeah. There it is. I can see it on his hand.
You know how terrified we are of diseases. And of that day, there was no cure. In fact, for leprosy, I think there still isn't really a cure for it. You just manage it. And then he puts his hand back in the cloak, and it's back to normal again. It's like, okay, what's going on here? The other part that people miss is that all those plagues that Moses brought were attacks against the gods of Egypt.
Mm.
So they worshiped crocodiles and all kinds of different gods, frogs and whatever. And so all of those were attacks against those gods. And God showing that he
is the true God.
He's the true God.
Stop worshiping these false gods.
All the way to the very end where the death of the firstborn. So
can't we bring that into context of the modern day of we as a society absolutely worship celebrities as gods?
We call them idols.
Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, I idolize this. And why?
Because they possess something that I guess to some degree we're all running after. Money, recognition, comfort and prosperity, they already possess what we're aiming for.
I think though, I think if everybody actually had what they thought they wanted, I don't know that most would actually want it.
It depends on your personality, but I think everyone, even a narcissist, is going to want at some point some anonymity where you wake up on the wrong side of the bed of your comfy pillow of richness and you're just having a bad day still, right? And you just want to be left alone. And your fear is, I'm going to go to the store and someone's going to recognize me.
and then I'm going to fly off the hinge and like, just leave me alone. Right. And then I'm captured, especially in the modern day of cameras.
Yeah.
You're basically character assassinated.
Yeah. You're no longer a hero. You're a monster, mm-hmm. which is probably a good segue.
How dare you? Yeah.
What's a villain?
And we'll go ahead and hit the pause button here, and we'll be back next week with part two of this discussion, where we talk about we all have somebody or something in a story or a character that we just think we'd be best maybe without. As always, this has been Blindly Obvious. If we can see it, you can see it too. You can visit our website at www.blindlyobvious.com, where you can catch up on past episodes, as well as learn a little bit about us. We are so happy that you're here, and hope these are just the conversations you've been looking for. If you like what you've heard, please subscribe and share the word. And remember, eyes mean nothing if the mind is blind.
It's Blindly Obvious, baby.